In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Yes, indeed. It's time to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by the Bangor Drive-In. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joins us. Happy Monday, Mr. Adams.
And a happy Monday to you, sir. How's everything going?
I'm doing pretty well. Was it today or yesterday I saw you and Sheridan and Stella? They all blend together.
That was yesterday morning.
That was yesterday. Okay. I knew it had happened recently, but, you know, days, weeks, they're all the same.
Yeah, like as we've discussed a number of times, time has no meaning.
No.
Anymore. That continues, despite the fact that pardon my French, there's a legion of morons out there who've decided that, you know what, everything's fine.
Right. It's over. Just go back out. It's like it never happened. Yeah,
depressing. It's depressing, Rich, honestly. It's one of those things where it's just like, because I know you and Carrie, and I know in our house, and certainly the folks that I keep close contact with, everyone has been very conscientious and very careful. And to see all these yahoos out there clearly not giving a crap, it's very frustrating.
I think that's
the thing. It's frustrating.
We were talking about it last week, and I asked the question, am I angry about it and frustrated with it because, you know, I want to be right, and there's an element of that, and am I a little jealous of those people out doing things that I would be doing if I thought it was safe? And that's part of it. But the big thing is I just want things to get back to normal. And that's not going to happen if people keep going out and flaunting their stupidity.
Well, and that's ultimately the thing. And it's like, I just every once in a while, it's an indicator that maybe I've been cooped up a little too long. But every once in a while, I'll just burst out. I just say out loud something along the lines of, if all you idiots just wore masks for a month, we'd be on the other side of this.
yeah, exactly.
You know, or at least, you know, on the right track.
Sounds like you've been eavesdropping at my house and copying my comments, because that's like a daily statement, usually while I'm watching the news.
It's just, I don't know. I don't know. It's a cliche at this point, but apparently you really can't fix stupid.
No, that's for sure. Even a mask won't fix that, but it'll keep you and I from getting it.
Right.
All right. Well, let's talk about some movies. You saw 4 over the weekend. My goodness. I mean, it's a step down from last week's record-setting 5, but still a healthy plate of offerings here. Where should we begin?
Well, you know what? Let's just go in the order in which I watched them. That'll be the easiest way to do it.
Okay.
So we'll start with a movie called Infamous. It's currently available video on demand. It's written and directed by a gentleman by the name of Joshua Campbell. And it's basically I think the elevator pitch for this movie is basically like Bonnie and Clyde for the social media age. it's about a young couple who find online notoriety thanks to a video record posted to Instagram of their sort of their criminal exploits across the Southland. You know, they're sort of robbing, you know, convenience stores, and then they actually stumble on a frankly kind of ingenious plot to knock over marijuana dispensaries, because, you know, they can't use banks, so there's always money on hand, which I thought was both clever and maybe a little prescient. Like, we'll see how things go going forward, but it stars Bella Thorne, who's a young actress who's been in a couple of things. She lives in Florida with her mom, who's a stripper. She works a dead-end job as a waitress at a diner, and she's obsessed with the idea of being famous, of being someone of note on social media. Like, she wants to be famous. She doesn't know how she wants to become famous. She just knows that she wants to be famous. Her life takes a turn when she meets a young guy by the name of Dean, who's this troubled guy who's moved to town to stay with his father as part of the terms of his parole. And as you might imagine, this trashball Romeo and Juliet story takes right off. They fall in love. She reveals her plans to head to Hollywood and become famous, though, again, can't be stressed enough, she has no plan for the actual becoming of famous. She just knows that she wants to be famous. And then circumstances. There's a terrible accident that leads for the two of them to sort of go on the run, and that's when their sort of videotaping robberies sort of comes into play, and they sort of go from Florida across the South through, they're headed through Texas and the whole shebang, robbing their way across and posting the videos online as they go and developing a pretty significant social media following. But, what goes up must come down. And the reality is things like that sort of social media fame is fleeting, and the only way to keep the likes coming is to keep upping your game. And when your game is crime, well, you can imagine things get pretty ugly pretty quickly. It's fine. I mean, it's one of those, like, I liked it more than I thought I was going to. Like, I actually thought it was going to be one of those movies that I just straight up would savage. And it's fine. Like, the two leads are personable enough, and the concept has, you know, its degree of interest. It's entertaining in its way. I imagine younger people than me will probably be engaged with it more, because I acknowledge that I am most certainly not the target audience for a movie like this. I don't even use Instagram. Like, I don't know what that's all about. So it's, but again, it's got its flaws. But I do admire the attempt to use this kind of lurid teen trashiness to speak to a larger idea, even if the attempt isn't wholly successful. So it's not great, but it's not a misfire. It's fine.
All right. That's the word on Infamous. What's number two?
So the next one I saw, we sat down and watched The King of Staten Island.
Yeah, it looks interesting.
It's the new Judd Apatow movie, co-written and directed by. It's his first directorial feature in like 5 years. Like, the last feature movie he directed was Trainwreck back in 2015, the Amy Schumer movie. I mean, he's done a couple of documentaries in the interim, but this is his first like narrative feature in some time. And it stars Pete Davidson of SNL fame, who also teamed up with Apatow to co-write the script. And it's sort of semi-autobiographical, like based on aspects of Davidson's actual life. And I gotta say, it was really engaging in a way that I don't know that I was necessarily expecting. It's really very good. Like, the cast is great. It's got some good laughs, but there's some very real emotion to it. It's touching. It's surprisingly moving, and it's much more warts and all as far as, because Apatow's got a type, and he sure loves these sort of Arrested Development man-child type stories. But he's really treating it in a much more sort of, I don't know, genuine and holistic way than he has in the past. To his credit, like, I think it really ultimately winds up working really well. So Davidson plays a guy named Scott Carlin. He's a mid-20s slacker, sort of drifting through life. He's an aspiring tattoo artist, but he's not very good at it. Still lives at home in Staten Island with his mother, Margie, played by a wonderful Marissa Tomei. She's fantastic, as per usual. Lives there with his mom and his sister, Claire, played by Maude Apatow, Judd's daughter. And just basically hangs out with his buddies from childhood, just smoking pot and generally not doing much. His struggles, emotionally and otherwise, all stem from the sort of defining incident of his life, which was when 17 years prior, his father, who was a firefighter, died in a hotel fire trying to save some people. And his dad's death has profoundly impacted his worldview, his attitude, and has basically dictated his path ever since. So he keeps everybody at arm's length. He's defensive, very snarky, sarcastic, and doesn't really allow his relationships to sort of grow. Due to an ill-advised incident involving trying to tattoo a child, he winds up getting into it with a gentleman by the name of Ray, played by Bill Burr, who shows up at his house to basically complain and yell at his mom about this dude tattooing his 9-year-old kid. And as these things tend to do, Ray takes a look at Margie and is like, "Hey, well, what's going on here?" And so for the first time in 17 years, Scott's mom is going on dates, and he's not super jazzed about it. So from there, we get this very up and down sort of whirlwind of positive and negative developments. So Ray's trying to connect with Scott, and Scott's trying to undermine Ray. Like, he's struggling to make any sort of forward progress. He's frustrating everybody, making them angry, everyone who's around him. And he makes even more questionable decisions, and these decisions could wind up ruining his entire life. And all of this is, you know, happening under the shadow of you know, Scott's deceased father. But we watch, and it looks like maybe with some help, he might be able to figure out a way to sort of move forward. You know, it's funny. I feel like Pete Davidson is sort of an ideal muse for someone like Judd Apatow. Like, he's that sort of, like, again, I'm using the term man-child again because I think it's really apt. But those are the sorts of stories that Apatow loves to tell. And it really is this story of a person who's chronologically a man but emotionally far from it. And, you know, and in the past, those figures have been presented in Apatow movies for primarily comedic effect. And again, don't get me wrong, this movie is funny. Like, it is very funny. But the humor is secondary to the sort of real emotional baggage that can come from that sort of never growing up, both in terms of the individual in question and the people around them. And, of course, the real-life inspiration contributes to that emotional heft, because you probably know, but I'm not sure the listeners all do. Pete Davidson's actual father, whose name was Scott, he was a firefighter who died during the events of 9/11.
Right.
And so that really lends this sort of undercurrent of pathos that Apatow's, he's gotten close a couple of times. I think Funny People is probably the closest, but I don't think he's ever gotten here before. But, like, all of it, like the Staten Island setting, the familial dynamics, the circle of shady friends, like, all of that is just amplified by the truth that's sort of underlying the narrative. I'm not going to sit here and say that Pete Davidson's a good actor, because I'm not sure that he is. But, man, when he's in his lane, he is excellent. And, you know, he's playing a version of himself, but, like, he's got this weird sort of sleazy sketchball charm and sort of almost antagonistic charisma that just makes it, like, makes him interesting to watch. And so, you know, doing it in a way that sort of is defined by, you know, by truth, I think really benefits him a lot. But that being said, the supporting cast is stacked. You've got Tomei, who's really great. Bill Burr is wonderful. The kids are really good. Pamela Adlon shows up for a couple of scenes as Ray's ex-wife. But there are also these two wonderful sort of ensembles within the ensembles. You've got Scott's circle of friends, like his childhood crew. Ricky Velez, Lou Wilson, Moises Arias, they're playing the exact dudes that a sketchy guy like this would pal around with. It's just they're a wonderful group together. They've got the right kind of sort of bro energy that's really cool. And then you've got the Ray's firefighting crew. We spend some time at the fire station and meet like the people that Ray works with. A number of great ones, including an absolutely dynamite performance. Like, he's only in a handful of scenes, but he's great. Steve Buscemi is in this movie.
Oh, wow. Who was again, a firefighter.
Yeah, he's another guy who has that sort of, like, he was, I think the, like, 4 or 5 years he was a firefighter before his acting career really took off. And so he has that real connection to the material, too, and that comes through as you're watching. You know, so you've got that sort of weird, sort of coarse charm and fraternal affection that comes with, you know, guys who spend that much time together working, you know, they sleep at the firehouse, like the whole shebang. And so, yeah, ultimately, it's a really funny, really moving sort of movie that builds on really well on a real life inspiration. Like, David's a different flavor of muse for Apatow, but I mean, that fundamental Arrested Development is still very present. It's a thoughtful movie, and it's a really great addition to Apatow's filmography. Like, yeah, no, it's an excellent movie.
All right, that's King of Staten Island up next.
So I watched, I saw Spike Lee's new movie, Defy Bloods, currently streaming on Netflix. It's his first offering that's a direct-to-streaming sort of film. This one's going to be tough because I got to say, first of all, it's what a perfect time for another Spike Lee joint to leave. I mean, there's never a bad time to get a movie from Spike Lee, but considering the current state of the world, this sort of live-wire, socially conscious storytelling that Lee brings to the table is particularly welcome. Like, it's just it's such a prescient and, I think, you know, important movie, particularly at this time. It basically tells the story of these four Vietnam vets who returned to Vietnam for the first time since the war. They're all carrying the you know, the weirdest age and the emotional burdens that they still carry from their time in war. And they're on this sort of dual quest to make right the real and perceived wrongs that they've suffered in service to this country, but all to be true to the brotherhood that they formed while they were in battle. And it's the it's typically stylistically triumphant from Lee, from Spike Lee. Like, it's he blends aesthetic techniques and cultural touchstones in such a wonderful way. He pulls absolutely incredible performances from the cast. It's just, it his movies contain multitudes in a way that no other filmmaker could match. But I mean, it's not like that's a surprise. Like, there's only one Spike Lee. You know what I mean? But yeah, so the four guys who come to Vietnam. There's Paul, played by Delroy Lindo, Otis, played by Clark Peters, Eddie, played by Norm Lewis, and Melvin, played by Isaiah Whitlock Jr. They fought side by side during Vietnam, and you know, like 50 years ago. They each did multiple tours. The years subsequent years haven't been kind, but their connection remains very strong. So they're back for two reasons. One of them is the surface reason and the secret reason. And the surface reason is they're planning to try and track down the remains of their former platoon leader. They called him Stormin' Norman, and he's played by we meet him in flashback. He's played by Chadwick Boseman, and who's also great. So that they can return his body to be laid to rest at Arlington. But the secret reason involves a mission that they went on while they were in country, where they had tracked down a downed plane that was carrying a payment to the Laotian freedom fighters that the CIA was paying them to fight on the side of the United States. And they found the payment, which is a big chest filled with gold bars. And so they wound up burying it in hopes of returning in a few weeks to pick it up, but they were never able to do so. And then, you know, they lost track of things and everything got... but then there was an event that caused a mudslide that unearthed part of the downed plane, and so they were able to get their bearings and like, oh, okay, maybe we can track it down. So they planned this trip to go overseas to get his body and to get the gold. But as with any sort of plan like this, there are always going to be complications. Paul's son David, played by Jonathan Majors, finds out what his dad's up to, follows him to the country. Otis reunites with his old flame, a Vietnamese woman who turns out has been harboring a particularly powerful secret from him. She's also the one who introduces them to this guy named De Roche, played by Jean Reno, who is a shady Frenchman who is ostensibly going to help them move the gold. And we also wind up crossing paths with folks working for a landmine detection NGO, a woman named Hetty, played by Melanie Thierry, and her pals, among whom is a guy named Simon, played by Paul Walter Hauser, who was so good in Richard Jewell last year, and he's very good here as well. But yeah, so they make their way into the jungle, and you know they find they're looking for their friend, but you know, the memories and the feelings from the past and the present are all sort of being pulled to the surface. They're left to confront the choices that they've made, and you know, they're no longer in a war zone, but they're still fighting various fights, including some that they're just not necessarily prepared for. It's just a masterful piece of filmmaking, Rich. Spike Lee has this wonderful ability to sort of utilize snippets of reality to inform and expand upon the ideas that he's putting forth in the films. Like he brings a lot of like real life clips of African American leaders and drops them into various spots. You know, stuff like Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. You know, as well as looks back at the response that Vietnam soldiers got from returning from Vietnam, like the less than welcoming arms of the American people when they returned, particularly the African American contingent, which was wildly overrepresented,
right,
in Vietnam. And so, yeah. So he's telling that story, and he does this wonderful thing where the present day stuff is filmed in the way you would expect, but when he goes to flashback, like he switches everything. Like he goes from digital to 16mm, and he changes the color saturation, and the stylistic choices are all different. Like he does this wonderful way to sort of delineate between the times, although. And this is a choice that I admire him for making. I'm not sure I agree with it. Rather than casting younger actors or trying to do any sort of digital de-aging, he just left the older actors playing their younger selves, like with no sort of like touch-ups or anything like that.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was an interesting choice, and I really admire him for taking the swing. I'm not sure it works, but I'm glad he did it, if that makes sense. There are a couple of really great moments. There's a repurposing where he drops in a snippet of Flight of the Valkyries during a very innocuous moment that is meant to be a deliberate callback to that moment in Apocalypse Now. And there's this great, it's so haunting. A couple of times he returns to it. He basically drops in the isolated vocal track of What's Going On by Marvin Gaye, like no music, like, and it's like, wow. So there's no incidental music or anything. It's just his voice singing the song during these moments. And it's just so powerful.
Wow. I've heard that vocal and it's amazing.
Yeah. And that's being powerful, man. It's like Delroy Lindo better get all the trophies for this movie. Like he's one of those guys who's been great for a million years. Like he's always great in everything that he does. But I feel like he's still incredibly underrated. He is phenomenal in this movie. Like, it's just outstanding, this wonderfully complex, raw, and brutal, like, self-loathing kind of performance that is just exceptional. And, I mean, the other guys in the group are just as good. He really, like, lets her rip in a way that is just incredible to watch. Like, he's so mesmerizing, including, like, towards the end, he has a couple of solo stretches that honestly you just need to see them to believe them, because they're just so amazing. But again, the rest of the ensemble is strong as well. This is a movie that it arrives at a time when films like this are particularly important. Spike Lee has never been afraid to address the inequities in the system as he sees them, and this film very much follows in that tradition. You know, it's a frank look at American war and those who fight it, while it's also deconstructing the notion of what it even means to be a hero. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you've got this visually stunning, heartbreakingly performed, just cinematic shot to the soul. Like, it's just an incredible movie that I can't recommend highly enough.
All right. We're running out of time, so we've only got about a minute left for Artemis Fowl.
Yeah, that I don't need a minute.
Okay.
This movie doesn't make any sense. It's a bunch of piled together nonsense, inexplicably directed by Kenneth Branagh. It's based on a very popular YA kids book that apparently fairies are real and they have spaceships, and sometimes they come and they're trying to maintain the divide, but there's some sort of magic weapon called an Oculus, which I'm pretty sure is Irish for MacGuffin, and both sides want it. And at one point, you have Josh Gad cosplaying as Hagrid doing Christian Bale's Batman voice for some reason. And then there's a big elaborate plan that also doesn't make any sense. There you go. Staggeringly incoherent. That's my basic review of Artemis Fowl.
That's
is, in fact, foul.
That's a blurb right there. Love it. Alan, thank you as always, my friend.
Hey, my pleasure.
Have a great week. We'll check in next Monday.
Sounds good, man.
Alan Adams of the Main Edge talking movies on Pass the Popcorn.